Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. You know it's Friday, and you know that means we have our Week in Review, but we're going to do that a little later in the hour, because right now we have Massachusetts Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley on the line. Congresswoman Pressley just won re-election to the 7th District and will be a standard bearer for a progressive agenda in the next U.S. Congress. This is our first chance to talk with her about how she's preparing for January 2021. Congresswoman Pressley, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Always good to be with you, Tiziana.
So I want to start by congratulating you on a second term.
Thank you.
You are welcome. And so here we are. We are headed into a Thanksgiving when people can't be together, Congresswoman. We've got these chaotic machinations around the presidential election. Daily virus case numbers are setting records. You know, you're a congresswoman, a family woman, a citizen, a member of our greater Boston community. What is weighing most prominently on your mind right now?
Well, I think I can say I'm like most people in the country right now that are holding simultaneous space for multiple feelings and emotions. You know, first and foremost, I'm feeling encouraged and grateful to this movement of the most marginalized, Black, Brown, Indigenous, AAPI, disabled young people who came together and mobilized. And this movement met the moment, resulting in the victory for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. And also the significance of our having elected the first female vice president, first vice president to graduate from an historically Black college or university, to be an immigrant, to be a Black woman, to be an AAPI woman. At the same time, holding space for the fact that 73 million people voted to cling to an administration that has operated with great callousness and corruption and has many failures that have created a tsunami of hurt, a confluence of challenges in this pandemic, the economic hardship and trauma that it has wrought against the backdrop of a national reckoning on racial injustice. And in Donald Trump, we have someone who has contempt for working families and the American people, and who has emboldened white supremacy. And so what I'm squarely focused on right now is just beginning the work of advancing a comprehensive relief package that mitigates the hurt that people are feeling with unprecedented food insecurity, unemployment, many on the precipice of eviction, and then ensuring an equitable economic recovery and a response to this pandemic. And I know we'll have that with this current administration.
There are several themes in that answer you just gave that I want to pick up on. And I think the first place I'll pick up is the movement. You talked about the movement of people who created this moment, the most marginalized people. One of the things that's coming out of the election is a real conversation about who bears the standard for the Democratic Party and for Congress, Democrats in Congress going forward. I know you are well aware of this tension. There are debates going on among elected officials and elected members of the House about whether, in fact, the House lost seats to the progressive messages and agenda items of the younger and new members of Congress, or whether it was the failure to take advantage of the political savvy and energy of the younger, newer, more progressive members of Congress that led to that loss. You are a member of that newer group. You are seen as one of the progressive standard bearers. How do you walk forward with all of your colleagues in the House and find a strategy, an agenda, an approach together that keeps the Democratic Party powerful in this next Congress?
You know, the 117th congressional class has been in Washington all this week for freshman orientation. And I'm reminded of the best advice that I received at freshman orientation as a member of the 116th Congress. And that is that in the process of legislating and governing, it is very easy to forget the plot. But we must never forget the plot, and that is the people. And so what I will continue to center are the people. And, you know, I do believe ultimately, since history is written by the winners, it is undeniable who delivered this victory. It is also undeniable that many of those who are part of this movement are motivated by issue-based activism, ranging from healthcare to racial injustice to the climate crisis. And so, again, the movement of the most marginalized has met the moment. Democracy is breathing another day. We are turning the page on this dark chapter in our history because of them. And so now we must advance policies that meet the scale and scope of our current crises, ensure an equitable recovery and public health response, but don't reset to where we started, Tiziana. That's very important. This is a time for recovery, and I believe reconstruction. We cannot return to that status quo normal because it was insufficient, unjust, and inadequate to begin with. And that is why we do see people being responsive to policies that previously they may have marginalized. These are not, they're radical in that they get to the root of systemic challenges. And so we have to be bold because we have to advance policies that are as systemic and as deep as the hurt that has been caused by policy violence and negligence for decades. I mean, what is the point of having a Congress that is the first pro-choice majority Congress in the history of Congress, that is the most diverse representative body in the history of Congress, that has an unprecedented number of women serving, if we don't legislate like it? To me...
So, but I want to ask you something about that before you go on.
Sure.
I hear your point. I also recognize that depending on how Georgia goes in January with those two Senate seats, you could be looking at having to work on legislation with a U.S. Senate that has a very different policy agenda and has power on what makes it to the president's desk, even as that president-elect is Joe Biden. How do you practically move forward in a way that gets legislation passed and signed? How are you thinking about the strategic approach to that with a Republican Senate, should there be one in place?
Well, first, I'm ceding no ground, and I'm doing everything in my power. Georgia is a state that I have spent a fair amount of time in throughout my time in electoral politics, and I'm in regular communication with the community-based organizations those camps on a daily basis, and doing everything I can to ensure that we do regain control of the Senate. I do believe that that is within our reach, and it is about continuing to build upon the organizing foundation made possible by many Black and Brown organizers. The story of Georgia is not of this cycle. It's a story that's been being written for the last decade because of people like Nakima Williams and Stacey Abrams and Dashika Ruffin and Tracy Lewis and others. And so I'm doing everything in my power to build upon that. We've already been fundraising for both of those races. Now, as to your more pragmatic question about the mechanics of things, I don't define the things that I advocate for as progressive. I define them solely as bold and responsive to the needs of the people. If others would like to then categorize those things as progressive, that's fine. I do want to make progress, so that is true. But I think the ultimate persuasion tool here is continuing to uplift the stories of those that are experiencing this disproportionate hurt. We did see some gains in relief packages. There was a bipartisan package we did pass early on in the House that included things that previously were non-starters. Things like paid family leave. You know, for example, there's a national debate right now about student debt cancellation. That is an issue that previously was considered a non-starter. And you see the Biden administration had a plan for it, and they're talking about that now. There's a national debate on that. Why? Because this administration was garnishing the wages and benefits of people who were defaulting on student loans in the midst of a pandemic. We have to jumpstart this economy. We have to get you know, relief to people. We have to get money in the pockets of people. And so canceling student debt is just one such way to get at that. Paid family leave, there's nothing radical about people being able to stay home if they're sick in the middle of a pandemic, or to care for loved ones in the middle of a pandemic. And so things that were previously more marginalized, the pandemic has laid bare these inequities and has really, I believe, proven that we are going to have to move boldly. What I will be fighting for in a relief package is that our immigrant neighbors are not excluded from relief, that we cancel rent and mortgages, that we have eviction and foreclosure moratoriums, that we cancel student debt, that we have reoccurring cash payments, you know, immediately. It is just... the failure of this GOP-led Senate is just, it's unconscionable that they have turned
so
their backs on the American people.
In our limited time, I want to bring our attention back to the Commonwealth, because you coordinated a letter today to House Speaker Robert DeLeo, Senate President Karen Spilka, also Secretary of the Commonwealth Bill Galvin. This letter urges them to address concerns that were raised by a coalition of Black legislative staffers called the Black Staffers of Beacon Block. One of the things that they pushed for in the summer was passage of a police reform bill, which the Boston Globe is essentially declaring today in its newspaper DOA. What's missed in the moment if that thing doesn't pass, especially given that the majority of the congressional delegation sent this letter today to our own statehouse?
No, I'm
Congresswoman.
Yes, I'm here. Sorry. I'm sorry. I just, okay. I was, that was a pregnant pause because okay. I was shaking my head with frustration and disappointment that could be the case, you know, again, against the backdrop of this national reckoning on racial injustice and, you know, many people who are quick to retweet and to hashtag Black Lives Matter. But the only thing that matters in this moment are policies and budgets. Those are the only receipts that matter. And so if there's an unwillingness to move on those things, you can really only define it as a lack of political will and courage and not being responsive to the moment. And the generations of hurt that have been supported by the brutality that we have seen play out in front of us in these consecutive months. But for generations, it is, and that's why, you know, I can't stop. I understand the heart of your line of questioning here, Tiziana. And the answer for me is always just that I don't have the luxury of being apathetic or cynical. Even when the landscape is sobering, I've promised my district, I promised the woman that raised me, that I was always going to fight. You know, I'm not going to stop seeking justice. I'm not going to stop seeking equity. I do believe another world is possible. And I'm going to continue to lead as a policymaker and as an activist. Because every time we've been able to advance transformative change in this country, it has come from movements. That is how we have advanced the Civil Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act, Medicare. That is the result of movements. The power of the people has always been greater than the people in power. And that's not ever going to change. And I'm not going to stop organizing. I'm not going to stop fighting. I'm not going to stop legislating, and I will not stop amplifying the voices of the people. I'm centering them in everything.
That is Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley, who represents Massachusetts' 7th District. Congresswoman, I wish you happy Thanksgiving, and I thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.